You're listening to the Professional Writer Podcast, episode 76. I'm your host, Laura Christensen, and I'm here to help you confidently plan, launch, and grow your writing-related business ethically with integrity. And I am pleased to welcome a return guest today, Amy Connell. Hi, Amy. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. I'm so happy to be back. Thank you for having me.
Amy, you are actually bookending the podcast this year. You were my first guest of 2021 back in episode number 43, where you were sharing simple stretches for desk jockeys. That's me, you know, the person who sits in front of their computer all day long and gets a sore back and sore wrist and sore shoulders and sore neck. And Amy shared some amazing simple to do exercises. In fact, Amy, I do these every single day, multiple times per day. And she even created a little video. So if you go back and look at the show notes for episode 43, you will see a cool video of Amy demonstrating how to do all the stretches that she showed us back on that episode. Really, really helpful for writers. So thank you for that. And now you're back. You're going to be my final guest of 2021. I'm going to be taking a break for the rest of December to enjoy the holidays. I hope you will enjoy them as well. And then we'll be back in January with new episodes. So let me introduce Amy to you. Amy is a certified personal trainer. She founded Graced Health, G-R-A-C-E-D, Graced Health in 2016 to equip women with simple and grace-filled ways to take care of and appreciate their God-created body and to enjoy a little chocolate in the process. You have been a busy girl this year, Amy. Since we last chatted here on the podcast, you published a book titled Your Worthy Body, Find Freedom in Health by Breaking All the Rules. You're a rule breaker. I love that.
Not by nature, but I am in this area.
And your book just arrived in my mailbox today. I'm holding it in my hot little hand right now. I just took it out of the padded envelope. It has that new book smell. You know how you have a new car smell? Well, a brand new book just out of the box has a new book smell. And so I'm really looking forward to reading your book, Amy.
Thank you.
The reason you and I got started talking again, you had listened to episode 72, where Lisa Baldwin and I discussed the costs of self-publishing a book. And you and I started chatting via email about that episode. You told me that while you share many of the same costs of publishing a book with Lisa, as well as having the same mindset about the investments that you've been making, that you also made some different investments than some of the ones that Lisa mentioned, specifically in the area of marketing and promoting your published book. And these are costs that all authors, whether we're self-published or traditionally published, should factor into our budget. That is what Amy and I are going to be focusing on today. We're going to be talking about some of the expenditures that Amy made, the way that she budgeted for her book, some of the consultants that she worked with, and then specifically some of the things that she did with marketing her book.
I was actually a finance major in college, and then I spent a lot of time in product marketing and product management. And the reality is you can have the best product in the world, but if you don't take the time to market it and to sell it, then people are not going to be aware of it. So as hard as it is as a self-published author to really put myself out there and try and market it, I also know that it's, I don't know if everybody would agree with this term, but it's kind of a necessary evil. It feels weird because it feels like it's self-promotion, but it's actually not. It's trying to message to people, hey, I have this and I think it will add value to your life in, you know, in whatever the message of the book is. I thought we could kind of start at the end and then work our way backward some. One of the things that I have been intentional about doing is taking the actual book, and I have been mailing that to people who have both been involved in it from the beginning. So maybe they have been in the book launch, maybe they were the consultants. And I have been mailing those, mailing the books with a little card saying, thank you for this, you know, or for your help in this. And that really on a per unit basis costs almost $10 for me to send. My author pricing, my book is 292 pages. I am self-published and I have been using Amazon's author rate. I looked into using a local printer, and because I wasn't trying to print too many books, they provided back a $17 per book cost. And I was like, wow, I can't afford that. I'm so sorry. And he was very gracious and understanding. But the book to me, between the individual cost plus taxes plus shipping, because even if you're a Prime or a Business Prime member, you don't get free shipping. That is $5.36 a book for my nearly 300-page perfect bound paperback book.
You said you're using Amazon's author rate. Because you published your book through Amazon, they give you a special author rate for what exactly?
Well, it's basically that I can print the same books that people will receive when they buy it, but I only pay what it costs to print it.
I got it. Okay.
So that cost to me, I think, is $4.36 for somewhere around there.
So essentially, you buy your own book from yourself.
Yes.
At a per cost rate.
Right. Yes. That has no margin in. So for example, yesterday I got my second set of 200 books that I ordered because I wanted to use those for speaking events that I have and upcoming engagements. And I received all of those at that individual rate that Amazon offered me. And again, you've got to factor in shipping. So even though my book was around $4.36, I also had like $80 in taxes and I had about $120 in shipping. So that's something to consider as well when you are thinking about your costs. I bundled all of that up and then I have sent those to people who have helped. I have sent them to people who I'm trying to create relationships with to serve their communities. So it might be for potential speaking opportunities. It might be to podcasters. It might be to other people who, quite honestly, just need to see the book in hand. As a relatively unknown author and someone who does not have a huge presence, I feel like it's important for me to show the end product and to kind of just give that, like, hey, this is what I have, and I think this would help your community. But they may not be necessarily as interested or tied in if I just reach out with an email. But if I can send them a book, then they're like, oh, now I see and now I get it. Because there's a lot of confusion, Laura, about like how we integrate our faith and our health together. And so that's one obstacle to overcome as it is. But I think whatever your message is, you want to show that you have your own unique voice, your own unique story, your message, and how that's different than other people in your same space.
You have been really building this audience of influencers such as bloggers and podcasters and people that may engage you to come and speak at their events and so on over the last few years. This is not just something that you're starting from scratch with the publication of this book.
Yes. And in fact, I just did an interview with a girl by the name of Crystal Prophet on her podcast about how having a podcast has been really helpful in establishing those relationships as an author. And the other thing that has been really helpful in terms of making relationships to get endorsements. So that's another aspect. And of course, part of my cost have been sending those final books to those who were gracious enough to give endorsements for me.
In terms of sending the books out to these people, do you have an estimate of how many books you have sent out to date? And you send those out through U.S. Postal Service Media Mail?
I ended up going through PayPal, which has a partnership with ShipStation. So I've got it down. It took me a while, but I figured it out. I have it down. You can create individual labels. And then I purchased half sheet labels. So this is, I don't know if you still have the envelope that you have,
but I
purchased I purchased an 8.5 by 11 inch padded envelope. And then I put the sticky label on there. So it looks nice and professional. You'd never know that it was me who did it. And then I put the book in there as well. So far, I have sent out about 30 books. Some of those were thank yous. Some of those were introductions of myself to potential influencers or people who might be interested in hiring me for speaking or whatnot. I expect to send out a good 20 more. And these are basically at $10 a piece. So if someone's listening and they're thinking that they may want to do this as part of their marketing budget, keep in mind that if you want to do this, it's a nice way to introduce yourself with someone, but it's not free. Mm-hmm. Email is free.
Yes.
DMs on Instagram are free. Sending a book is almost $10.
But that you're making an investment, like you said, you're getting the actual printed book into the person's hand, and they're much more likely to read it, to follow up, to email you back, to go, wow, this is interesting. Why is she thinking of me? You know, it makes you feel special. Like when your book arrived in the mail today, I mean, I knew it was coming because you'd said your book is coming. And then it was there on the kitchen table when I came down for breakfast. My business manager, AKA my husband, had got it from the PO box last night and left it there for me this morning. I'm like, oh, good.
Yeah, there it is. There it is.
A new book. I can hardly wait to read it.
Yes. And if I may add really quickly to that, what I decided that is worth the investment to me, because if I can get on someone's podcast and talk about this book, if two people can purchase the book, then based off of what I make off of Amazon, which is about $4.50 or $5 a book, then I will have paid for that cost. So for me, it's an investment in having those communications and potentially, relatively easily making that back with a couple different book sales.
When you send the book out to these potential influencers, I'll just call them influencers, as people who might spread the word about you and your book, you said you included a thank you note to people that had helped you with the book, but this is a different group. This is potential influencers. So did you include some kind of a cover letter or a one sheet or a podcast pitch sheet or something in with the book so that those people would have something to look at and a way to get a hold of you? How did you structure that?
So far, I have not cold called influencers. It has been, I have communicated with them over email, hey, may I send you a book so you can learn more? And then I include a note card in there, a handwritten note card, because those are so rare right now, a handwritten note card reminding of what it is. If and or when I get to the point where I want to start essentially cold calling people or just sending out information, I will include a deeper letter and a one sheet and more in-depth information. The other thing I did, which I don't know if you have been able to look through it or not, but if you open it up to the second page, I include a bookmark. And this serves two purposes. One is a free bookmark, and the bookmark says Full of Grace. The book cover designer was able to give me kind of a stock of just the background of the book. And so I was able to kind of take that. And then it's all on brand. I'm trying to stay on brand here. And it says Full of Grace. If you turn it over, it says something to the effect of, have you
read it? Can I read it?
Perfect. Yes. Thank you.
Because I'm looking at it for the first time right now. I saw the bookmark in there right away because I collect bookmarks. I'm like, ooh, cool. A bookmark. Okay. Yay. It says on the back, have you ever gone to purchase something on Amazon, saw it didn't have many reviews and found something different? Yep. Me too. That's why I'd be so grateful for an honest review of Your Worthy Body on Amazon. It takes less than 5 minutes, but it makes a huge impact. Very good.
Reviews are critical and they are really hard to get. And in fact, I was sharing with my family last night that it's so weird and vulnerable to have this book out in the world. And a lot of my community in my local neighborhood have purchased it and they've sent me pictures and I've got it. And then I haven't heard anything. And so I was sharing, I was like, it's so weird. And there are very few reviews. And again, I'm relatively unknown. It's a new book. I think right now there are 5 or 6 reviews up on Amazon. And you know, of course, I'm hoping to get more. And my husband said, well, Amy, how many reviews do you leave for books? But the bookmark is there as a reminder of, look, this would be really helpful to me. And this is why. How often do we hear rate and review, subscribe, you know, but not really understanding the why. So I just really wanted to make sure that I communicated that. And it was just a nice little friendly reminder behind a really pretty bookmark that says Full of Grace. Yes. And hopefully that will be effective.
Yeah, it's just a little nudge. And I like the way you say it takes less than 5 minutes of your time. Really, it does. It doesn't take that long to leave a review and makes a huge impact. Now, another thing that you did, Amy, as I'm looking through all the goodies, is it also has a note card. It's like a large size postcard that you wrote your personal note to me. This also matches the branding of your book cover.
It does. Again, I took that same kind of stock. I think he gave me maybe a square background. So when you see mm-hmm. the book, Your Worthy Body, you'll kind of see this background. It almost looks like paintbrush strokes. Yeah,
like a watercolor wash.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes. And he gave that to me. So I took that. I just designed that on Canva. It wasn't anything super, you know, exciting, but I went to Canva because you can print directly from Canva and mm-hmm. put that on there and then put the white in front. That way, when they got it, it all kind of looks the same. I've been trying to be intentional about branding, but yes, that was another thing I did. Now, I will say the bookmarks I did through a company called U Printing. It's just the letter U, P-R-I-N-T-I-N-G, because Canva does not have bookmarks. Maybe they will later, but I'm a huge fan of Canva. I know you, I think you've used it as well, Laura.
I am too.
Yes. And, and so I did the note cards on Canva and then I did the bookmarks on YouPrinting.
Okay. And listener, I will put a link to YouPrinting and Canva Pro branded note cards. You purchased those from Canva. So I can put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah.
And all the other things that we're going to be talking about, I'll just say right now, I'll put all of that in the show notes over at bloggingbistro.com so that you can follow up on those things.
I got 1,000 bookmarks for $85 mm-hmm. from YouPrinting. And that included shipping, that included tax. I got 100 note cards from Canva for $64. And then the other thing I did was I created business cards with my website, where to find me in terms of on the socials that I have a Graced Health podcast. And then on the back, I put a cover of the book. So that way they can turn it around and say, this is what the book looks like. And then I got those again on Canva. I received 100 of those for $17. So those weren't an exorbitant amount, but to me, it's just a little something that I can give. I was at a parent meeting for my kids' basketball team and they were asking about it. So I was able to pull out a card, a business card, and give it to the people. And that's something that they can take with them, because I don't know about you, Laura, but I have a really short-term memory and I have a hard time remembering things. So that way they have a visual and tangible reminder of what you have to offer them.
I do that all the time. I always carry business cards with me, and people say, oh, business cards are so passe. No one uses them anymore. Well, actually they do. Yeah. I just happened to be somewhere on vacation just last week and I met someone and she instantly gave me her business card. And then I, in exchange, gave her mine. We're in fact following up with one another. So it was really helpful that we both had those handy. And this was just a friendly, like we met, you know, out in front of the condo where we were staying. It wasn't like a business meeting or anything. It's just kind of a random chance meeting, but we both happen to have our business cards on us.
So yeah. And it's a relatively small expense. It's worth, I mean, to me, yes. It's worth having. And then that way people aren't like, well, what was her name or where can I find her? Yeah. How do I get in hold of her? It's just, it's there and hopefully right. goes in their pocket mm-hmm. or their bag or wallet or whatever.
So you ordered those, you said 100 business cards for only $17. That's a really good
Correct.
Deal. And how about some other types of merchandise that you created to give away as gifts and also to sell at your book launch party? Tell us what you did there.
I had some people who were really involved in the process and I wanted to thank them. So what I did was I created, and these had dual purpose, but I created mugs, and actually I have, sorry, listener, you guys, you can't see this, but I created a mug that says full of grace and coffee. So full of grace kind of seems to be the thing that I'm using a lot because it's a multifaceted meaning for me. But I created these mugs and I wanted them to be a good quality mug. Like I didn't want it to be something, some cheapo piece of promo. Like I wanted it to be something that people were excited to pull out in the morning and drink from, and you know, coffee, tea, whatever it is. So I did make those. And then I also made visors because I'm a health and I'm a health related book and I'm a personal trainer. I wear a lot of visors. I wear a lot of hats. So I had visors made that say full of grace as well. I packaged those up with a book, gave those to people who had been intimately involved in the development process or the launch process. And then I also sold those items at the book launch party. I will also have those available at future speaking events. I've got an event at a church in a couple weeks, and I will have those as backup. And honestly, I've had a lot of people say, I didn't get enough mugs at the party. I want more. And so right now, I'm just kind of selling them, and I may make another order later. The thing is, whenever you go somewhere, and I've been to women's events at my church, you make a connection with the person on stage. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, they're sharing something vulnerable. They're sharing something that helps you connect with them, and you want to connect with that message. You want to remember what you learned, how it made you feel, whatever it is that you came out of there. And I really wanted to remind my community to give themselves grace to themselves, to others, and their health, and the whole message of my book. So I thought that those would be two good things that were good reminders, but also congruent with my message. So, you know, advisor's great because we're, you know, I'm either promoting an active lifestyle or my community already has an active lifestyle. Plus, you know, wear your sunscreen and hat to protect your skin outside.
Yeah, good point. And, you know, I was thinking also t-shirts are another thing that somebody like you who's in a health-related profession could give away. But I was thinking about it, and I don't always feel comfortable wearing t-shirts with words printed on them. I feel like I'm kind of a walking advertisement for that particular company. And I know that's just me. That's my weirdness.
No,
but I would definitely wear a visor.
Well, I feel the exact same way. And actually, I did not put Graced Health on there. I did not put my logo. I did not put my book on there. I would rather someone see a mug or a visor and go, "That's really cool. Where'd you get that?" And then that is a more authentic opening. I'm the same way. I don't want to be a walking advertisement, a free advertisement for clothing or for anything else. So I feel the same way. And I was really intentional with what I put on there because I just wanted it to be something that would bring them joy and not feel like they were being used to promote my product.
That's a really good distinction. Thanks for sharing that. Let's move on and talk a little bit about some of the getting the book published type expenses, some of the different consultants that you may have hired throughout the book publishing process itself.
I really wanted to make sure that the information that I put out there was high quality, valuable, and I also wanted to make sure that it was technically correct because my book focuses a lot on fitness and nutrition, you know, exercise science and nutrition science. I thought I need to have someone look at this and just make sure that I haven't missed the mark somewhere. I did enlist the help of several different consultants. I had one guy who helped me. He looked through all of the fitness-related chapters. So I just bundled up the fitness ones and sent it to him. That was really helpful. He was able to affirm most of what I put in there. He was able, because he's an expert, he was able to say, "Hey, your community may be interested in this." For example, that high-intensity exercise can be really helpful to your skin. Because he knows that my community is women like 35 to 55, and you know we're concerned about our skin. So he was able to help me with that. I had a couple different people help me in the faith element. I wanted to make sure that I was honoring to the word and that I was using scripture in the correct way. I had someone help me for another chapter that just kind of had a general mental health, self-care aspect. And this is someone who has a counseling certification. And so she was able to assess from there and talk me through some of the things. And we really reworked that particular chapter. And then the other one that I did was I have one chapter in there. And if I can spend like 20 seconds just explaining the format of the book. It's broken up into three pieces that I call warm up, get her done, and cool down. And the warm up really challenges the mindset that we have about why we think we need to look a certain way, why we feel like we need to move a certain way or eat a certain way, and approaches that from a faith element of, spoiler alert, it's so we can do what we're called to do, not so we will have a perfect body. And then I also explore how this might be viewed from other, particularly other cultures. As a white woman who was born in 1974, I grew up pretty much only seeing skinny white women on magazines, in billboards, in, you know, stuff like that. So one of my chapters really explores the differences in cultures and particularly black body image versus white body image. I had a friend really work with me, and just she kind of guided me in some things, helped me to articulate things. She taught me a lot of stuff with regard to her experience. And I want to be very careful that this is not all Black women's experience, but her experience as a Black woman with regard to body image and stuff like that. So once we worked through that chapter, and it was back and forth and back and forth, I took that chapter and sent it to an online friend I have made who is a reverend out in the New Jersey area, and she is also a Black woman. So I said, I would love to pay you as a consultant because I want your honest feedback on this. And that was another thing that was really important to me, is that that chapter came out in the most honoring and respectful way as someone who is not Black and walking into that really sacred space. So I tried very hard to be sensitive to that. And I know we want to talk about sensitivity readers, and she was definitely part of that group of sensitivity readers. I paid for her for consulting with that. So those were some of the other consulting costs that I had that, quite honestly, more than anything, I just needed affirmation. I am brand new to this. I've never done it before. And I needed someone to say, yeah, you're on track, or you're not on track, and let's get you there. Because having never gone through this before, it's really overwhelming and vulnerable. And I just wanted to make sure that I could provide the highest quality content as possible.
We talked about sensitivity readers and subject matter experts in episode 73, did an entire episode around that, why authors need sensitivity readers and subject matter experts. And Amy, you're the person who actually gave me the idea for that episode, because we were emailing back and forth and you were telling me about these sensitivity readers and these subject matter experts that you worked with. And I thought, oh, what a great idea for an episode. My listeners need to hear more about that. And so I did some crowdsourcing there, and I think 5 different authors contributed to that episode with their own experiences with sensitivity readers and subject matter experts. And now here we are hearing from Amy, who had a slightly different perspective. I like what you said about how you consulted with a fitness expert and that you bundled together the related chapters that dealt with fitness. So listener, if you are going to be working with hiring subject matter expert, you don't necessarily have to send them the entire manuscript to review, especially if your book is broken into chunks like yours is, Amy. You could just send them the related sections or related chapters or related portions of a chapter to review bits and pieces that you feel you most need assistance with. And then you had somebody else review for the faith element, super important, especially if you're quoting from scripture or doing anything theological or doctrinal. It's really good to make sure that you have a good sounding board for that. You had a mental health self-care expert. You have a friend who gave you input on the body image sections of your book based on her own experiences as a Black woman, so that you could be honoring and respectful. Then you had some people help you with the wordsmithing as well. Would that be editors and proofreaders?
Well, that's separate from the editors and proofreaders. So these were the people. I had 2 people. One, she really helped me with the book title and the book subtitle. And this was a lot of back and forth. The original title was I Have to Work Off Dessert and Other Rules to Break. And I always got a really great reaction with that. And then people could never remember the name of the book because it was so long. So I realized I need, as much as I loved that, that was like the ultimate, you know, what they call it, like murder your darlings or something like that. So I was like, okay, I've got to find something smaller. So she helped me with that. And then I ended up hiring someone to help me with the back of the book copy. I felt like I was so entrenched in everything that I needed a higher level perspective. This was $250, which for me was well worth the money. Well worth the money, because not only did I use it for the back of the book, I also used it for the website. I also used it for the Amazon description. I mean, I have gotten my money's worth out of that. And she works, this is just a freelance thing that she does, but she works at a publisher's house. So she knows what they're looking for. And she, I feel like I was able to get a professional, traditional publisher assistance with this as a self-publisher. So that was something that if you have access to that, I would highly recommend.
And you know what, Amy, the very first thing I did when I took your book out of the envelope, I flipped it over and looked at the back cover. Being that I'm an editor and a proofreader myself, the first thing I did when I looked at the back cover was I did not read the copy, but I looked at it to say, does she have too much copy on her back cover? So I looked at it from the perspective of a proofreader or an editor.
Well, I hope the answer was no.
And I said, oh, that's just perfect. Because she's got short sentences, short paragraphs. She's got four bullet points on the cover. Then she's got a space with kind of a little line dividing the back cover copy from the bio. She's got her picture there. And the picture actually looks like you. It's a current picture. And then she has a short bio. It just all fits together very neatly. It's a quick read. And so as soon as I got done evaluating the fact that I actually liked the way your back cover copy looked, then I read it. That's when I said, ooh, this sounds like this is going to be a really fascinating book. I can't wait to dive in and start reading it. You hired an expert in writing back cover copy to help you make sure that it really was appealing to the reader, because a lot of us base our buying decisions on the cover copy.
Right.
And like you said, you can put that on your website, you can announce it on your podcast, you can use it anywhere and everywhere, and you can adapt shorter or longer versions of it to use in different places, depending on what you need it for. One of the most difficult things for authors to do is to write their bio and to write their back cover copy. They tend to get too wordy and they write five times as much as they should on the back cover, squish it all into one paragraph and call it a day.
Yeah.
No, don't do that. If you want to sell books, don't do that. Do what Amy did instead.
Well, I was very fortunate to do it. And like I said, it was definitely worth the investment because then I didn't have to worry about it and I was able to use that. So it saved me a lot of time in the long run.
And then I like what you said too about having someone work with you to help you with the title and the subtitle. So you had a long, fun, catchy title, but it wasn't memorable.
Correct.
And that got boiled down to three words, your worthy body, which is much shorter, easy to remember. When I was writing a book, I am title challenged myself. I was working with a royalty publishing house, so I knew that ultimately they would be the ones deciding on the final title for the book, which they did. However, the chapter titles, because it was a nonfiction book, the chapter titles I wanted to be really good and really catchy. Since I am title challenged, I was in a writer's critique group at the time, and there was one woman in there who was just so amazing at coming up with titles. That group helped me to come up with all my chapter titles for that book. I did not hire people to do that, but I relied on my writer's critique group to help me with my chapter title. There are a lot of great resources out there that can help you with things like book titles, subtitles, and chapter titles. Is there anything else that you would like to add about sensitivity readers or subject matter experts, Amy?
Yes. Well, like I said, I really worked hard on the particular chapter that, so the chapter title, going back to the titles, is called She Has the Perfect Body. Every chapter title is a rule to break. This is the chapter where I really explore differences in Black women's body image and white women's body image. I had made a connection through a female sports athletic company several years ago and had just a kind of a nice working relationship with one of the fellow ambassadors. And I used a story of hers in the chapter. I mentioned her name, some of the things that she had done and, you know, how to find her. When the chapter kind of came to a good point, I actually sent it to her and I said, hey, I don't know what protocol is here, but since I mentioned your name, I would like to share this with you and kind of get your okay. I don't know if that was necessary or not, because I have a journalist friend. She said, you know, she probably is well known enough that you don't need to do that. But I just felt like it was the right thing to do. So I reached out to her and I didn't hear back. Now, she's really busy, so I gave her the benefit of a doubt. I waited another week or two. I reached out again, didn't hear back, and a third time. So after that, I thought, she has her own reasoning for this. I respect it, but I'm taking her name out. I adjusted that because more than anything, want to come across and want to convey a respectful attitude and exploration within that Black body image and white body image. And I just didn't want to go there. If she didn't, if she wasn't either comfortable, or it might be that the relationships that she had with her own business prohibited her from even responding to that. I don't know, but I just thought, you know what? This is my call to shift the words and to take it out. I changed it some so that people may not be able to know exactly who it was. And if, you know, if they can figure it out, they can figure it out. It's a respectful piece, but because I didn't get her okay with that, even if I didn't need it, it was important to me because of the subject matter.
I think that's really an important consideration too. When I was working with a royalty publishing house for a book that I had published a while back, I interviewed, I think, 40 to 50 different people for that book. And for the stories that were actually included in the book, the publisher did require me to have a release form signed by each of those people who I interviewed, even if I changed their name. Some of them asked me to remain anonymous or to just give them a pseudonym in the book, which I did, but I still had their official release forms in their real names that was kept on file by both me and by my publisher. I want to wrap up our discussion of some of the expenditures that you made on your book in getting it published and on marketing it and promoting it. Amy, did you end up spending approximately what you had anticipated or budgeted, or did you go under budget or over budget?
I had an idea of what editing would be. As I started getting in and interviewing editors, I decided that it would be worth the investment to have another level of it, which is a manuscript critique. So that's what she called it. I think different editors call it different things. So the way I describe it is a funnel. And the manuscript critique was the highest end, broadest end is probably a better way of saying it. So she was able to go in and look at that, and she did a lot of really magical things with it and enhanced the book significantly. From the very beginning point, that cost, and that was $1,000, that cost was, I was like, ooh, that's a little bit more, but I tell you what, that was well worth the money. I then went into line editing and copy editing. I had a pretty good idea of how much that would be. And then I went into proofreading. So I used different editors throughout the different stages. Once we got to the proofreading point, there turned to be a little bit more work than we had expected. And again, at that proofreading point, you are then out of a Microsoft Word document and you are in a PDF. So my interior designer had taken this into a PDF. And when you have changes, it is significantly harder to make changes in a PDF than it is in Microsoft Word. Because if you're in Word, you can just accept, and when I say accept, A-C-C-E-P-T, that you can, you can go through, you can easily accept them. And PDFs have to go manually one by one. So because we had a little more changes toward the end than I was expecting, that did increase my cost with regard to the editing pieces. So yeah, I would say allow for something like that. You know, if you have ever done a home project, either by yourself or with a contractor, or if you've ever built a house, you know how things can be going along and you think they're going pretty well, and then I've got this little problem. And so, and then all of a sudden your project costs 10% more. I would say that is probably a good attitude to have. And when you're budgeting, have a cushion. You know, maybe it's a 10% cushion to allow for a little problem, to be able to work through that. So that way you don't end up crying in your hands at 7 o'clock in the morning like I did.
Yes. I'm sorry about the crying, but a 10% cushion, really, really great tip. I recall one of the many hats that I have worn during my career is I used to be a professional proofreader of books. One time I proofread a book that either had not been copy edited at all, or the copy editor had missed 99% of the errors. And I actually ended up copy editing it, which I wasn't technically supposed to do, but I couldn't help myself because I wanted the book to be good for the author. It was a self-published book. I was doing it off of a PDF that I had printed out the manuscript, which is typical of proofreaders, where you actually print hard copy of the book when you proofread it, because you read things differently online than you do when you're reading a print copy. And so you kind of need to do both when you're proofreading. Anyway, that book had to go back for copy editing, which I believe increased the author's fees that they had to pay to their book packager. But hopefully in the long run, they were happier with it because a lot of those errors were removed. So having that 10% cushion built in for those unexpected expenses can be very, very advantageous to you so that you don't end up crying. Well, you may still cry, but you may not cry quite as hard.
Exactly.
Now, Amy, you and I are both big believers in providing our readers and our listeners with helpful resources. I know you and I both give away a ton of free stuff, and then we also charge for other services that we offer. So how did you structure the chapters in your book to include some resources for your readers?
That was something that was really important to me. I wanted my reader to be able to read something and then figure out how it applied to them. So what I did was almost all of my chapters have one sort of resource or another. The fitness-related chapters, they will have some sort of fitness-related either workout or warm up, or you know, the chapter of I have to work, get my hour of exercise in, which again, I'm breaking. So I give you a 20-minute exercise to do. For the chapter that says I don't want to bulk up, I give you a strength train, a full body strength training thing to do. I have recipes in there. I have journal prompts. I have a metric. So when we're talking about a holistic way of looking at our health, not just on the scale, I give you some things to consider. You know, go to your doctor, get some blood work. What are these? Write them down. What's the latest thing? I mean, if you haven't been to the doctor in a while, maybe you should get your triglycerides checked or your cholesterol or something like that. At the end of almost every chapter, I do have a resource. One of them is a playlist to listen to on Spotify because I tell people why walking actually is a real workout. And so you can listen to that. So some of them are a little more interactive than others. What I wanted to do is I pulled together all of the different resources that are in the book, and they are available to you when you read it in the physical book, in the ebook. And I provided a QR code. So this QR code takes you to an online resource library that is free to you. And there you can do a workout with me. You can see the movements that I talk about of like, here's how you can structure a workout to make it work for you. You can print off the list of resources that I have found helpful in my own awareness of racial reconciliation, or the journal prompts that I have, or when I talk about your different callings, it encourages you to think about and write down what your different callings are. So I really wanted to make it interactive and something that people could have a tangible and big, massive action step.
Yes, massive action. I'm all about the massive action.
That they could use that and actually apply what they've learned and figure out how to find their own health and apply all of the information in there rather than finishing the book, closing it up and going, yep, that was good. What's next? Because I want people to feel empowered to take control of their health.
I'm looking through the book as you're talking, Amy. I see where the QR code is. It's right in the introduction.
It's in the introduction.
I was searching for it.
Yes. And then the book is broken up into three parts. Every part has the QR code. Okay. I have just a little introduction to each part and they have the QR codes.
Yes. And this book is so nicely formatted, folks. It's just really easy to skim through. Amy, you use lots of bullet points. You have sidebars, you have recipes. It's got it all. It's got really simple things that are set off like in little boxes. It's just beautiful.
Thank you. And
I'm going to enjoy reading
it. Gorgeous. Yes, it's a beautiful book. And I can say that because I did not do it. I had a fantastic interior designer who put a lot of time and effort into it. And I am so grateful for all she did. But it's funny that you talk about the bullets because I do a lot of my reading at night. I can go from perfectly fine energy to crashing within the span of about 24 seconds. So I always wanted my reader to have a natural point where they could say, okay, I'm going to bed and I'm going to pick this up. And for them not to be like, wait a minute, what was I reading? That's kind of how I think. I think in bullet points, I think in sections. Yeah. And I wanted to make it really easy for my reader to know exactly what we're talking about and not get lost in paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs.
Yes. And this is a book that I would really love. I think I will read it in small chunks. And I do most of my reading late at night, so I'm not exactly 100% awake when I'm reading. I like the fact that you have the subheads in there and the chapter sections. And it's just all broken up into very small chunks so that you can just read as much as you are able to take in at that point in time. And then you can take Amy's massive action steps and do the things. And so the link to the QR code takes us to Thinkific. Is that correct?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about Thinkific for those that are unfamiliar with that platform.
I found Thinkific just from doing, I think I searched like free online courses because as someone who wanted to provide a free resource, I didn't want to have to pay to have a hosting place. Thinkific offers a lot of different ways that you can structure your course. You can have videos on there. You can upload PDFs for people to print off. That was important to me because I do have those recipes and journal prompts. So it's lots of different multimedia. And I chose Thinkific because you can have one free course with unlimited users.
Nice.
Yes. Yes. And so just from the back end, because I think this will be interesting to your community, Laura, what I have decided to do is as I get notifications from Thinkific saying a user has joined your course, I manually take that and convert them over to my email service provider, which is ConvertKit, and I get them into a welcome sequence. And I do that manually because I didn't want to pay the $39 a month.
Well, that's a lot.
At some point, I may be able to do that. I mean, mostly I just wanted to get information out, but I thought it might help me with determining if I want to look into developing a revenue stream. So if all of a sudden everybody is doing a lot of mobility and which is real gentle movement, and if I'm seeing on the data and the analytics that people are really interested in that and they're watching it a lot, well, maybe it's worth considering creating a course that they would pay for, and then I can afford to do the instant conversion. But for me, that was just the attitude that I wanted to take with this, and it would allow me to see what people are interested in and what are people downloading, what are people clicking on. So I thought from a business perspective, that would be helpful as well to see what's resonating with my reader.
And just a little side note here for you, listener, if you're doing something through Thinkific, like what Amy is doing, where she's got this whole resource library set up there as a free course, and you want to add the people that sign up for your free course to your email list, if you're not paying the extra to, you're paying it to Thinkific, right? To have them added to your ConvertKit email list. If you're not paying that extra and you're doing it manually, you definitely want to make sure that you have permission from the user to add them to your email list. So oftentimes when the person is signing up for your course, there will be a little checkbox that they can tick that just says, yes, I agree to be on Amy's email list or whatever you want to call it and receive her newsletter, blah, 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 resources. So just make sure, listener, that you're doing it legally and ethically and that you have a way for the person to confirm or affirm that they indeed do want to be on your email list in addition to receiving the course from you. And you can also include prompts along the way, like in some of those videos and things in your resource library there on Thinkific. You can say, hey, if you're not signed up for my email list yet, here's what you'll get. And I encourage you to sign up and here's where you go to do that.
You know, Laura, that's probably a good thing for me to do and add that extra step.
That's particularly important for people that are living in the European Union countries. I would suspect that most of the people that you are selling your book to are probably in the United States or in North America. However, if you're in an EU country, there are some very specific laws around email marketing where they have to actually physically give that affirmative consent by ticking a box that says, yes, I agree to this, instead of just kind of the implied agreement, which it sounds like what you're doing now, which is better than nothing. Yeah, you can go back and add in that little checkbox too to doubly protect yourself and to protect your subscribers, because you certainly don't want people who are signing up for your course to feel as if they're being spammed by you. You want them to feel as if, yes, I want to continue interacting with Amy. I love these resources that she's providing me that come along with the book, and I like to see what else she has to offer. What's your best tip for estimating the cost that might be associated with publishing and marketing?
One tip is whatever you think you're going to spend, add the 10%. And the other thing I would recommend people do is learn from people whose goals are similar to yours. There may be executives out there who want to create a book for a calling card and they go through things really quickly. And their cost, if they're talking about that on a podcast, then those costs are may be different than yours. So I would say learn from those who are kind of walking the same path as yours and spend time listening and learning. I listen to several podcasts. I mean, obviously yours is one of them. Writing at the Red House is a great one. Chandler Bolt has one called Self-Publishing School. And again, he'll bring on a whole lot of different types of authors. And so I will pay attention to the ones who seem mostly like what my goals are. The Book Marketing Show podcast with Dave Chesson, he's the guy who's Kindlepreneur, which is a really great resource if you are planning on self-publishing on Kindle or KDP. Listen to what has been helpful to those who have walked before you and figure out how that might apply to you in terms of your costs.
And where can we go to buy your book, Your Worthy Body, Find Freedom and Health by Breaking All the Rules, and to find out more about you and to join your email list?
Yes, I would love that. The book is available at Amazon. I am Graced Health, G-R-A-C-E-D, Health on the socials. I hang out mostly on Instagram, but I've a little bit in other places. And then my website is gracedhealth.com. You can also go to yourworthybody.com, but as I have already divulged, it's the same information that's on the back of the book.
Thank you so much, Amy.
Thank you for having this platform for people like me who are working on writing a book. I'm definitely learning from you and from your guests. So thank you for all that you do, Laura.
Oh, you're so welcome. And thank you, listener, for being a part of the Professional Writer Podcast community here in the year 2021. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we'll be taking a break for the holidays and back at you in January of 2022. So stay tuned, have a great holiday, and we'll talk to you in January.